Welcome everybody to Football Insiders. It is just beginning draft season, but guess what? The NFL never sleeps, and we've already been met with explosive storylines, all of which we're going to talk about today. The great thing is you don't have to hear me do it. I get to bring in two of the very best in the business each and every week. First up, we have Pro Football Network senior NFL analyst, Trey Wingo. Trey, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. Who knew that one little tweet at midnight could turn into such a thing? We'll get into all of that, I guess, and everything else, but lots to discuss.
Yeah, and joining us, as always, because it is draft season, is Pro Football Network senior draft analyst, Tony Pauline. What's up, Tony?
How you doing? Back from Indianapolis. Lots of information from last week, and, you know, like you said, it's never-ending. We go from the combine straight into free agency craziness.
Yeah, and Tony, last week we got to do the show together, so I just have one very important question for you is, do you miss me?
Anything you ask me, the answer is always no. So just
sometimes you don't want the answers to questions, just so you know.
Apparently that's the truth. Well, listen, guys, let's start with the very first question. Let's talk about it. Are you guys not entertained? We got word out, a report, that the Baltimore Ravens placed a non-exclusive franchise tag on star quarterback Lamar Jackson. What that means is that any team can negotiate with him regarding a contract. The Baltimore Ravens have the right of first refusal. And if they do refuse to match a contract he negotiates with another team, they get two first-round picks in return. Immediately following that, we got a number of reports that some teams were saying they were out on pursuing Lamar Jackson. That has set off even more conversation to be had. So let's have that conversation. Trey, are you surprised by the Ravens' decision to only tender the non-exclusive franchise tag to Lamar Jackson?
I am, because the Ravens know what it means to have a franchise quarterback and what it means to try and win games without a franchise quarterback. With all due respect to Tyron Huntley, who was an AFC representative in the Pro Bowl, option 4,632. Look, this is really interesting on so many levels, because we have been talking about this Lamar Jackson potential contract extension for years. Now, there are a lot of complicating factors here, okay? One of which hasn't been discussed enough, in my opinion, is that Lamar doesn't have an agent, which means he's involved in all of this, and he's not helping himself, in my opinion, along those lines. Now, you could also say, well, the Ravens, you know, also worked with Roquan Smith and got $100 million contract done, even though those aren't the real numbers. We all know that, with Roquan Smith, and he doesn't have an agent. But it's difficult, and it's different when it's a quarterback. What I found interesting, not only about the non-exclusive tag, because the Ravens are basically saying, okay, Lamar, this is what we've offered you. You don't think that's enough. Why don't we let the market dictate what you are? Right. And if that's the situation, then we'll see what we have to deal with. So this is where Lamar not having an agent right now, this is what's, in my opinion, what's really hurting him. It's one thing to negotiate an inside linebacker's deal without an agent, okay? It is another thing completely to try and negotiate a quarterback deal in a quarterback-driven league where, let's be honest, half the league is looking for an upgrade at that position. Yeah. He's 26 years old. He's a former league MVP. He's been to the playoffs multiple times. He's won a playoff game. And, you know, people are going to start saying, well, the injury bug. Well, let's be honest about that. I'm not sure how much down the stretch of this season was injury and how much down the stretch of this season was I'm not risking myself until I know I have a deal. Okay? So there's that part of it. And I think there's a lot of people that believe that the way Lamar plays might not – help the team long-term in terms of a fully guaranteed deal because of the potential injury. Then that certainly has to be part of it. But I just want to go back to something that Ravens owner Steve Bisciotti said about a year ago. It was March 29th, 2022 at the NFL owners meetings. This was right after the Deshaun. And again, everybody blamed the Browns. Okay. We've been saying this forever. All these Lamar Jackson problems are because of the Cleveland Browns. And by the way, that's checkers to chess, baby, right there. When the Browns screwed everything else up so bad with that deal, they're screwing one of their division opponents potentially out of their quarterback. So maybe they're sharper than we think.
not just a division opponent, Trey, but the city that stole the Browns from Cleveland.
Correct. To begin with. Correct. So if you want to go down that rabbit hole, it's really fascinating. But this is what Steve Bisciotti had to say about the Deshaun Watson contract just about a year ago. I'm trying to answer. That's when I had a reaction to it. It's like, damn, I wish they hadn't guaranteed the whole contract. I don't know that he should have been the first guy to get a fully guaranteed contract. To me, that's something that's groundbreaking. It'll make negotiations harder, he added. But it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to play this game, you know? We shall see. If I was bogged down in negotiations with Lamar, then maybe I would have a quicker reaction to that news. Wow. Which is a fancy way of saying that Bisciotti was the first guy to fire the mark out of the cannon here about, as an owner, about the Deshaun Watson contract. And yay, verily, here we are in this mess. And I do feel like Steve Bisciotti, the owner, is drawing the hard line here. And maybe Eric DaCosta, the GM, and John Harbaugh, the head coach, have a little more feelings about making sure they get this deal done with Lamar Jackson. There are so many complicating factors into this. And I understand all of them, but I can't help but go back to this. It was a year ago. A lot of these teams, the Falcons, the Panthers, were almost all the way in on Deshaun Watson, who is a very good quarterback but doesn't have Lamar Jackson's resume, had been away from football for almost 2 years before he ended up playing a regular season game in 2022, and had 25 to 26 allegations of sexual assault against him. And all these teams were like, what can we do to get you to be our quarterback? And now they don't want a former league MVP who's 26 in his prime and has had multiple playoff runs and has won a playoff game. Suddenly you're not interested in him at all. No. None of this smells right.
Tony, what are your thoughts on this? Because I think that's a big part of the conversation too, is how much is this Deshaun Watson fully guaranteed? Are these teams making assumptions that that's what Lamar Jackson wants, or is that the thing that's scaring them away?
Well, I think it's assumptions, because I don't know that the league is sharing, teams are sharing information on what Lamar Jackson wants at this point in time. Soon we'll find out. I think it's very telling that, you know, the Ravens don't look at him. They're probably more concerned about giving him a long-term deal, a long-term guaranteed deal, as Trey touched on. You know, the playing style, you talk to people in the league, and they say Lamar Jackson's playing style does not lead to longevity at the quarterback position, even though he's 26 years old. Taking off upfield and running the ball like a running back and taking those running back hits, doing somersaults and flips in the end zone and landing on his back after he scores a touchdown. Those things do not lead to longevity, as opposed to, say, your prototypical pocket passer or even an RPO quarterback that will take off on occasion up the field. You know, Lamar Jackson's legs are at times as important, if not more important, than his arm. And I think that that is the concern with the Ravens as far as giving him a long-term guaranteed deal. That's one of the concerns. Now we'll see what happens once he hits the market, if another team is willing to pony up the type of money that he wants. And I think Trey's absolutely right. We've talked about this before. The fact that he doesn't have an agent and he is a quarterback really, really kind of just makes it that much more difficult to get to the end game for what Lamar wants and what the teams want.
Yeah, I think also, Tony, to be clear here, I think a lot of the teams feel like, and this may be part of it, okay, it's a non-exclusive, right? Which means that we'll draw up an offer for you, and then the Ravens, if they like it, can just come in and match. You know what I mean? And I feel like a lot of the teams don't want to basically do the work for the Ravens, only to have the Ravens say, okay, fine, you know, whatever. That's what the market says. We got it. I think that's part of it as well. We're really early into this process, okay? Right. Because there's a ton of stuff that still has to happen. Remember, if he is going to be traded, he has to sign the tender first before they can trade his rights, okay? So Lamar is not only looking for money, he can also set the trade market for himself, okay? Because no team can trade him until he signs the tender. And we are a long way away from any sort of real actionable deadlines here in terms of when Lamar has to do anything. You know, they have to work out a deal by July 17th if he's going to do a deal with the Ravens. But he doesn't have to show up or do anything before the start of the regular season, before there's really an impact here. So we're really early into this process, but there's a lot of things going on that make it really, really complicated.
And I agree with you. You know, the other teams don't want to do the bidding for the Ravens. That's why I think it's a good move by the Ravens, because they're going to find out what the market is. And if some team gives them an offer that's, you know, they don't want to pay, okay, by Lamar, we want our two first round picks in return. And maybe they get a quarterback, a young quarterback this year or in future drafts.
Yeah. And there's some, you know, and I would ask you guys what the credence is to this argument about other teams being the ones who will have to now start sort of this negotiating or this market setting process for Lamar Jackson. If you do that and you are now publicly involved in negotiations with Lamar Jackson and you fail, you now have to go back into the locker room with your existing quarterback and say, hey, by the way, we still really believe in you, pal. Go give us your best effort.
Now, you know, I hear that, but let's talk about some of these teams, okay?
Yeah.
Who, Desmond Ridder for the Falcons, Howell for the Commanders. I mean, like, who cares? Like, you're lucky to be here, man. You know,
that is true. I mean, that's 100% true.
It's not like it's a franchise quarterback there. That's what makes this so bizarre. We're talking about teams that have sucked for years because they've had crappy quarterbacks.
Right.
All right. Crappy quarterbacks. And now all of a sudden, I don't know, league MVP 26. there's a lot of mitigating factors here. I will tell you this. I talked to somebody at the NFLPA. I said, how closely are you monitoring this situation? He goes, we are watching it very carefully. And I said, what's your level of concern about the C word being collusion? Mm-hmm. And he said, there's always a massive concern about that.
Let me ask this question then to both of you. If there was collusion in this regard from the NFL owners about protecting against another fully guaranteed contract going to a quarterback or any player, basically, would that necessarily, from a business perspective of the league, would you guys consider that to be a bad thing? That's one of the big knocks on other leagues.
Well, it's illegal. It's illegal. So, yes, it's illegal. It's against the NFL. It's against the CBA. So, yeah, it's a big freaking deal.
Yeah. All right. Well, that pretty much sums that up. By the way, Lamar Jackson, not the only quarterback in the news and not the only star quarterback looking to move teams here. It was reported yesterday that the New York Jets flew to California with owner Woody Johnson en route to meet face-to-face with Aaron Rodgers, who has come up from his hole in the ground and discovered that there's going to be six more weeks of winter. And so,
6 weeks of this BS.
So that being said, it looks like the Jets are real players in the trade market for quarterback Aaron Rodgers. Tony, let's go to you first here. You're pretty plugged in with the Jets. Do you like this idea for the Jets to be bringing in Aaron Rodgers as a quarterback?
Well, listen, we reported at PFN, I reported that the Jets were all in on Aaron Rodgers from the Senior Bowl. I reported it. So that was a month and a half ago. So, it's not surprising. And it's, you know, I keep wondering why Woody Johnson is making these trips. Because, you know, when you got Joe Douglas there, when you got Robert Saleh there, and Robert Saleh is a guy that exudes a lot of confidence. He's a guy that players really like. I understand Woody Johnson's going to sign the checks, but I guess, you know, Woody Johnson said that he is willing to pay whatever it takes to get a star quarterback here in New York, because that's one of the pieces that the Jets desperately need. I think what will tip the scales is Nathaniel Hackett. If Rodgers decides to come to New York, it will be primarily because of Hackett, his buddy, a guy who he had success with in Green Bay. And as I reported from the combine, you know, the Packers are more than happy to let him go. I mean, they've come to the end of it with Aaron Rodgers. They want to do it in a respectful way. If you read my article from the combine, and now with Derek Carr off the market, I mean, the Jets have got to make a move, or they're going to be stuck with Zach Wilson next year.
Yeah, and Trey, you also reported that this meeting was happening, and that the Jets and Aaron Rodgers were in fact having these conversations. What's your take on this for the New York Jets and for Aaron Rodgers? What this means for his, you know, potential legacy?
Well, the legacy question is really interesting. We can get into that in a second, because if this indeed plays out with Aaron Rodgers leaving, there's a really interesting sort of end period to how Packer fans are going to look at him. Here's what I know. As Tony said, the Jets have been all in for a while, and I tweeted it out on Monday night, about 7:30 my time, I guess 12:30 East Coast time, and I woke up the next morning. It's like, oh, okay. Quite a few texts and quite a few DMs about that one. I just know that there was a meeting going on between the two of them, and that means the Packers had to give the Jets permission. Okay, that's the thing to understand, because otherwise it's tampering. Okay, so and whether it's legal tampering or illegal tampering, it's tampering. Okay, so they had to get permission from the Jets, from the Packers, to do that. The Packers are ready to move on. Okay. They just are trying to do this, as Tony said, in some way that seems respectful to Aaron Rodgers for the 15 years that he's been there as their starting quarterback. Everyone is contingent upon one thing. What does Aaron want to do? Does he want to retire? I don't think he wants to retire. Does he want to go back to Green Bay? I don't think he wants to go back to Green Bay. And I'm damn sure that the Packers don't want him back in Green Bay. Remember, it's just a year ago where they said, whatever you need. You're the two-time MVP. You got us the number one seed again, even though we effed it up in the playoffs in the snow at home against the 49ers. You know, whatever you need, you'll get done. So they gave him that massive deal, right? That massive deal ends up costing them Devontae Adams. Let's just be clear about that. That's why Devontae Adams was traded, because of the money that Aaron Rodgers got. So now, after that cost them Devontae Adams, Aaron Rodgers leaves potentially after that season. How does your Packer fan base feel about Aaron Rodgers' legacy then? Because your decision to demand that contract, which he had every right to do after his performance and the way he's played, cost them Devontae Adams. And the very next year, it cost you Aaron Rodgers. And what do you get for it? Literally nothing. You didn't make the playoffs after being the number one seed a year ago. I have to imagine that's going to leave a bitter taste in a lot of Packer fans' mouths about the end and, as you mentioned, the legacy of Aaron Rodgers. But all this is about one person and one person only. What the hell Aaron wants to do, right? And the Jets have sort of been slow playing this thing because they thought they had potential Derek Carr as a backup, as Tony said. Well, now they don't. So now the Jets are in full, like, we got to get this bleep done. You need to tell us what you want to do. We need to know, because if they're not going to get Aaron Rodgers, do they do the Jimmy Garoppolo thing? Do they potentially look at Lamar Jackson, 26 versus 39? Okay. And so all of this, as it has been for three off seasons in a row, is about one person. It's about one dude, Aaron Rodgers. And he needs to fish or cut bait, for lack of a better term, for the benefit of the Packers, for the benefit of Packer fans, for the benefit of the Jets, and for the benefit of other teams knowing what the hell we're trying to do at the quarterback position. It's all about this one guy yet again.
Well, look, I just want to tie those two things together, Lamar Jackson and Aaron Rodgers and the New York Jets. Back in January, before we traveled out to the Shrine Game, I was talking to a buddy in the Ravens organization, and we were talking about Lamar Jackson. And he, off the cuff, said to me, he said, I could see a franchise like the New York Jets giving Lamar Jackson $50 million a year. And it was kind of one of those things that, but now as we're getting closer, you know, if the Jets don't get Aaron Rodgers, what is the contingency plan? Where do they go for after not getting far end to Aaron Rodgers? You know, and that's going to be, it's going to be a huge offer that Lamar Jackson just can't refuse.
That brings up one of the other questions I wanted to ask. We were talking about it previously with Lamar Jackson, which is, if you're the Jets now, you are not publicly courting Aaron Rodgers. And if you don't get him or any of these other quarterbacks like Lamar Jackson, like Jimmy Garoppolo, do you run the risk of having alienated the only guy on your roster, number two overall pick, Zach Wilson? And should that even be a concern for them?
Well, I mean, at some level, it has to be a concern, but he alienated the team with the way he played. Okay. I mean, let's be honest. And the way he handled it he said it wasn't his fault. So if anybody alienated anybody, it's Zach alienating the Jets more than the Jets alienating Zach Wilson. And at this point, maybe tough love is exactly what Zach Wilson needs. Yeah. Like, put on your big boy pants, dude, and go out there and be a quarterback, not a thrower, be a quarterback. because those are two very different things. Jeff George, as Tony Pauline will know, one of the greatest arms in the history of the NFL, but you know what he wasn't? A leader, and he wasn't a quarterback. He was a thrower. Zach Wilson at this point in his career is a thrower. He's got to learn to be a quarterback. And if he has to take a few pegs down as the second overall pick a couple years ago to learn that part of the job, then so be it.
Yeah. Ryan Leaf, another guy, fits in that mold. But, you know, to answer Brett's question, who cares? I mean, the Jets are in this situation because Zach Wilson has been such a bust. Yeah. And, I mean, how many more times are they going to hit the reset button on this guy and give him another chance? So if you alienate Zach Wilson and he gets offended by it, too bad. Maybe if he gets offended by it and he comes back with a chip on his shoulder to prove something, take it to the Jets, well, that could be a good thing. But at this point in time, if you alienate him, he's done nothing for the team anyway.
Yeah. By the way, real quickly, before we move on from all this quarterback stuff, let's just throw this out. And I think, Brett, you and I about talked this privately. Let's assume for a second, and I know what that means, that eventually Aaron Rodgers goes to the Jets. I don't know, and Tony, you might be in on this as well. I don't know if I've ever seen a larger disparity in quarterbacks between the two conferences, okay? If Aaron Rodgers goes to the AFC with the Jets, who are the top three quarterbacks in the NFC? Jalen Hurts and Kirk Cousins? Dak Prescott? Brock Purdy? I mean, and then you have Mahomes, Burrow, Allen, Herbert, Lawrence. At this point, still Lamar, and maybe Aaron Rodgers in the AFC. I'm not sure I've ever seen a wider swing of top quality quarterbacks from one conference to the other than what we would have if Aaron Rodgers jumps to the Jets in the AFC.
No, I agree. Yeah. Derek Carr, New Orleans. I mean,
I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy how big that canyon would be. And think about how tough it is to get to the Super Bowl as an AFC team, as opposed to how you get there as an NFC team in terms of the quarterbacks you have to go through. And we saw that play out in Super Bowl 57. The Eagles defense, which had been so good all year long, they hadn't played anybody like Patrick Mahomes. In fact, he was so good, he only needed, 24 minutes to put up the points to win. And they didn't sack him once.
Scoring behavior rate. There you go, Trey. Yeah. Thank you.
You got it. By the way, everyone stop pretending like Patrick Mahomes isn't the one, okay? Just end it. I can't wait for all the hot takes this offseason about how the Chiefs are going to fall back again. If Patrick Mahomes is breathing and Andy Reid is there, they're still the team to beat. Full stop.
Well, look, I know you said you wanted to move on from some of this quarterback talk, but as they say in the business, but wait, there's more. Derek Carr, who actually did go to a new team, we don't even have to speculate about him. He is now with the New Orleans Saints. Tony, what are your thoughts on that move for him and what that means for both the Saints and Derek Carr, the quarterback?
Well, let's backtrack for a minute. You know, the Jets were courting Derek Carr until they were able to make the move on Aaron Rodgers. The belief in New York was that Derek Carr really didn't want to come to the Jets, that he was just using them to get a better deal. Now, last Wednesday, as I'm walking towards Lucas Oil Stadium, I was talking to a member of his team, and he said to me that, you know, that's not true. At that same moment, Derek Carr was meeting with Robert Saleh, Joe Douglas, and Woody Johnson. You know, you look at the New Orleans offensive line, it shouldn't be as bad as it is because they have got a lot of number one first-round picks, a lot of second-round picks. They've got some talent on there. So I think that was part of the reason why Carr chose New Orleans. And I think it is not a coincidence, from what I know, that Derek Carr chose a team that doesn't have an intrusive owner. You know, Carolina was talked about. You got David Tepper there. Obviously the Jets with Woody Johnson, who wants to be front and center with all the big moves. Goes to New Orleans with Gail Benson, and you talk to people. Gail Benson lets the football people do everything within that New Orleans organization. And coming from the Raiders, I don't think it was any surprise at all that he went to an organization where, you know, the owner, although Gail Benson did meet with Derek Carr, the owner kind of sits in the back and lets the football people, you know, run the show for better or worse.
Yeah, and first time in his career that he's going to be on a team that actually has a pretty decent defense in terms of points per game allowed. Trey, what is Derek Carr going to New Orleans Saints mean to you, aside from the fact that it further or maybe he's now the best quarterback in the conference.
Yeah, he is. Well, he's the only quarterback in the conference, right? I mean, you got Kyle Trask, as we said, Desmond Ridder in Atlanta, and Sam Darnold, according to our friend Tony Pauline, in Carolina. So, yeah, he's the only quarterback in that division right now. And again, it goes back to the discussion. You're telling me all those teams have no interest, really no interest in Lamar Jackson, or they're waiting to see if someone makes the big splash, and then this thing's going to play out for a long time. This Lamar Jackson thing's going to play out for a long time. Look, Derek Carr has been vilified way more than he deserves for his play. He is a good quarterback. He's a good quarterback. He really is.
Top half, right? You would say he's in the top half.
Yeah, and he's just – since he came to the Raiders in 2014, they're either dead last or 31st in almost every meaningful defensive category. Derek Carr is not the reason, okay, that the Raiders have floundered. It's not Derek Carr's fault. The Raiders have been an impossibly bad team for a long time, and everyone makes poor decisions every once in a while. So I think that right away, New Orleans looks like the team to beat in the NFC South. Because the Bucs are imploding. Okay, they just got rid of Donovan Smith, which means only Jensen and Wirfs are still there on that starting five offensive line that carried them to Super Bowl 55 with Tom Brady. I mean, like, I get it, Brady was good and all that kind of stuff. You go look at that offensive line when they had Smith, they had Kappa, they had Jensen. And Wirfs, that entire line was a huge part of their success in Super Bowl 55. And they're still way over the salary cap. So they're imploding. Carolina doesn't have a quarterback, and Atlanta doesn't have a quarterback. Right now, Derek Carr makes the New Orleans Saints the team to beat in the NFC South. And now we'll just see what happens in terms of the other teams who they get to play quarterback.
Yeah. And look, I bring this next topic up at my own risk, but the City Chiefs decided not to tag left tackle Orlando Brown, letting him test the market. They have
He's gone, by the way. He's going to go. And the other part for that is also Andrew Wiley is a free agent. Now, I've been talking to people in Kansas City, and I believe Andrew would like to stay, and I believe the Chiefs want Andrew to stay. The problem is Andrew wants a little security. So if someone is going to offer him a 4 or 5 year deal, I think he's going to take it. I think he would love to be back in Kansas City, and I think the Chiefs want him back in Kansas City. There's a much more higher risk or a much more higher possibility of Wiley being back than Orlando Brown being back.
Yeah, and as you noted, Andrew's signed a series of 1 year deals the last couple of years, so that long term security something. That is important to him for sure. On top of that, with Orlando Brown, they also released Frank Clark. Trey, is this the year that the Chiefs take a step back? I'm just kidding. Don't answer that.
But the
conversation.
Frank Clark has been talked about as far as being cut, you know, the past 3 years. So he basically had one foot out the door every offseason, you know, since 2020. They selected George Karlaftis last year in the first round. Very good chance that if they want to go that route, a smaller edge rusher, which is the type of player that they like, will be able to get one at the end of the first round. So Clark wasn't – I don't think Clark was a surprise at all, especially with the money that he was doing.
Yeah, and again, he's one of those guys that you can't look at. His market value is going to be fascinating because his numbers in the regular season are average, but he shines in the postseason. He shines in the postseason.
Third all-time sack leader.
Yeah, so when you're looking at where Frank Clark goes, what weight do people put on that? And if you're Frank Clark, don't you want to make sure you go to a place where you think you have a really good chance to be in the postseason, right? Because, I mean, that marriage, that market value, I think is going to be very fascinating because clearly he's not a guy that's going to produce week in and week out, weeks 1 through 17. But in a limited run in the postseason, he is a massive disruptor. And it's not just the sacks. It's everything else that he does in the postseason. Tip balls, pressures, you know, TFLs. So it's going to be a fascinating marriage how that works out. But I will say this about the Chiefs in the upcoming draft. They have too many picks. They have too many. I think they have 10 or 11 picks in the 2023 draft. They're going to package some picks and get one or two three quality players that they think can really help them. I believe the Chiefs will be a heavily involved in trades in and around the draft this year.
Yeah, a lot of things to for them to figure out, especially along the offensive line. All I know is I've been told to start doing left tackle work, so take that for what it means.
It'll be a position battle in camp for them because there's not one guy in the draft that they really love.
The final topic of this segment, we have to go back to the quarterback position because we talked about guys that could be changing teams. We talked about a guy that did change teams. There's a guy who stayed with his team, only complicating, of course, the Lamar Jackson situation. Is Daniel Jones staying with the New York Giants? He long-term agreed $40 million a year with $82 million guaranteed. Trey, what are your thoughts on the Giants sticking with Daniel Jones, making him their guy for the future, and what that does to complicate the quarterback negotiations that are going with other players?
Well, what you just said is the most important thing. It's really a two-year deal. On paper, it's a four-year, $160 million deal, okay? It's a two-year deal fully guaranteed for $82 million. And that's why it was the right move for the Giants because Joe Shane, the general manager, Brian Daboll, did a masterful job of getting that contract done before the franchise tag deadline so they could put the tag on Saquon Barkley. Now, Saquon's not happy with the tag. No running back is ever going to be happy with the tag. But running backs better get used to the tag because that's the way they're going to get paid dramatically going forward because of the problems that come with that position, longevity, injuries, all that kind of stuff. And you can find guys in the sixth, the seventh round like Pacheco, okay, yeah, who was a monster for the Chiefs as a seventh round draft pick. So it was a great job getting it done. And it was the right thing for the Giants to do. And I heard of these people, how can you pay Daniel Jones $40 million for 15 touchdown passes? Because they need a quarterback, okay? They need a quarterback. And the $40 million mark is going to – yeah, if I'm Lamar Jackson, I say $40 million for him, what about me, right? Yeah. What about me? But this is – again, this is where Lamar not having an agent really hurts himself. It was the right move for the Giants to do because it gives them two more years to figure out if Daniel Jones is going to continue his ascension, Tony, or was his last year sort of where he's leveling off and maybe that's the best you're going to get out of him. Because remember, Tony, as you know as well as anybody, the Giants receivers this year were picked up from pieces along the way and nobody knew who the hell they were. And he did a really decent job.
And they got rid of the big ticket item in Galladay. I think it was a brilliant move by the Giants.
Yeah.
Not only to keep Daniel Jones, they get to keep Saquon Barkley at a good deal with the franchise tag. And don't forget, you know, there's what, $35 million or up to $35 million a year in incentives for Daniel Jones. So I think, you know, the Giants did a great job. They go into free agency now. Yeah, they got to get some receivers. They need some help at center. But you're not going into free agency looking to fill a major hole at the running back position, which was a possibility. You know what the situation is now for the next couple of years with Daniel Jones. You know, as Trey said, what they got to hope is that Daboll continues to develop Daniel Jones, that 2022 was not the exception to the rule, that he can build upon that. And, you know, prior to Daboll, there was a lot of change. There was a lot of you know, infighting and things that didn't really help Daniel Jones. I think this was a brilliant move for the Giants, not just Daniel Jones, but tagging Saquon Barkley. And now they can really, they basically have the same needs today that they had a week ago. And, you know, they got their quarterback and their star running back locked up through 2023.
Yeah. Well, look, as we've talked about for a while, already today, there has been an incredible amount of movement, staying, going, rumors going on across the NFL for NFL teams that may have shifted everyone's view of how these teams could perform in the future. If it has, Caesar Sportsbook has a great thing for you to be able to do, which is to go there and place bets on the future, Super Bowl odds, conference winners, whatever that is. What does Derek Carr being in New Orleans now do for their chances to maybe win the conference, given the lack of quarterbacks that are there? Go place those bets over at Caesar Sportsbook. You will get a risk-free opportunity to place a bet up to $1,250 and get it risk-free even if it loses. So go do that now. Use promo code PFNCZR to place all your futures bets for the NFL over at Caesar's Sportsbook. Okay, we're going to get into our second segment here because, yeah, we've talked a lot about the quarterbacks. Guys, less than 48 hours ago, the NFL Combine ended. We haven't even talked about the NFL Combine yet. Let's do that now with what we're hearing. Tony, one of the big questions that always comes out of the NFL Combine is, what players did the best to move and improve their chances up teams' draft boards? Who are your Combine risers coming
out of this one? Let's talk about a riser. Well, let's talk about the combine. I mean, the combine is about expectations. You know, if you go to the combine and scouts expect you to be a 4.5 40 linebacker and you run in the 4.4s, you've exceeded expectations. That's going to help your draft stock. If you're a defensive back and you're expected to run a 4.55 and you run a 4.6 or slower, that's going to hurt your draft stock. So it's about beating expectations. And the guys who don't do as well or basically get their draft stock nicked are the ones who don't live up to expectations, whether it be the testing, whether it be the position drills, whether it be the interviews or the medicals, which we'll find out about down the road. As far as the biggest risers, I think you got to start with Nolan Smith, the linebacker from Georgia, who only played 8 games this year, had a torn pectoral muscle, came in at 238 pounds, ran a 4.39 in the 40. He was faster than about 70% of the receivers who ran. 41.5-inch vertical jump, did not do position drills. He's going to wait till the Georgia Pro Day to do position drills. But the fact is this is, you go back and you look at that 2021 film, where out of that year, Georgia had 4 defensive players selected in the first round. Nolan Smith was one of the best. I mean, he is a 3-down linebacker who is a forceful blitzer. He can play in space. He's great in pursuit. He can drop off the line and play in coverage. And now you see the guy runs a 4.39 40 and a 41.5-inch vertical jump. You know he's got the athleticism to match what you saw on film with him in 2021. He was my number one riser. Byron Young, another SEC defender from Tennessee, 250 pounds, ran a 4.43 in the 40, had an 11-foot broad jump, was exceptional in position drills. Showed that athleticism, you know, moving up, the ability to change direction seamlessly, effortlessly, didn't gather. Also had good 3 days of senior ball practice. So Byron Young is a guy who probably has cemented himself as a day two pick, 3-4 outside linebacker, maybe a one-gap defensive end. Again, the athleticism, the athletic testing numbers match what you saw on film with him. Christian Gonzalez, the cornerback from Oregon, 4.38 in the 40, 41.5-inch vertical jump, exceptional in position drills. Just looks seamless doing all the cornerback drills. I think Gonzalez has solidified himself as the number one cornerback heading towards the draft. You're looking at a potential top 12 pick. Going to have to look at my screen here. Adetowima Adewari, defensive lineman from Northwestern.
What'd you call me?
Came in a shade under 283 pounds, 4.49 in the 40, more faster than half of the receivers, 37.5-inch vertical jump. This is a guy that we reported from at the Senior Bowl. No one could block this guy. He shows the athleticism. He's not going to be a first-round pick, but he's going to be an early second-round pick. This guy's Adebuwami's draft stock has been on a straight shot north. Wow. Literally since January, and he helped himself further at the combine.
Yeah, Peter King wrote about him as well as one of the risers. Absolutely right. You guys have been on this one for a long time, and I'm going to make sure I nail it before I even try and pronounce that name.
Well, you know what they call him? Yeah, I actually got to meet him. I sat down with him Wednesday at the combine at the Omni Hotel. And he's a guy who looks big. He looks bit of 283 pounds. He's an articulate guy. He's a nice guy to speak with. He recognized me the next day, and there's a lot to like about him.
Very cool. Well, look, not everybody can rise up draft boards coming out of the combine. Unfortunately, we're going to have players that didn't perform up to those expectations and ended up sliding down a little bit. Who are some of those players that got to make sure they get it right for their pro days, Tony?
Yeah, you got to look at the safeties from Florida. Rashard Torrance ran a 4.72 in the 40. Torrance Dean ran a 4.75 in the 40. You know what? You could be the best player in the world, but if you're a defensive back and you're running the 4.7s, you basically just ran yourself out of the draft. And unless somehow these guys really turn it around at pro day and run the low 4.5s, and there's some sort of reason as to why they ran in the mid 4.7s at the combine, they basically are undraftable at this point in time. Rashee Rice, guy that we've spoken about for in the past here, ran a 4.51 in the 40, although he did run a 1.49 10-yard split. that shows that he's good in the first 10 yards, but he doesn't have that deep speed, which teams thought. Also, a lot of off the field issues with Rashee Rice. He has an injury called the sesamoid injury in his right foot, which may have led to the fact that that's why he didn't run a good 40 time. And there were a lot of off the field issues, including one which he had with a former member of the SMU basketball team who now plays at Memphis, which has a lot of teams concerned. So Rashee Rice, someone that people were mocking as a potential late first round pick, he's going to go somewhere in the middle of day three. Situation for him keeps getting worse.
Yeah, we talked. You brought him up and brought his situation up on this show just a couple weeks ago. Unfortunate that he couldn't overcome some of those off-field stuff with a better on-field performance. Still a little bit of time to get it right. We'll see what happens there. Before we talk specifically, Tony and Trey, about quarterbacks or wide receivers and how they did, or cornerbacks, coming out of the combine, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up our good friends at Underdog, because for them, the season is never over. You can actually begin doing their best ball tournaments right now, drafting rookies who haven't been drafted yet because the draft's not for another month. Do that now and use promo code PFN. That's all you got to do with Underdog Fantasy, where the NFL season is never over and draft season is never over. Go play their best ball tournament. Start talking about and drafting some of these rookies and prospects that we're talking about right here on the show. Just enter code PFN when you download Underdog Fantasy today. Now, in addition to risers and fallers, Tony, there are some other players at very marquee positions that are coming out of the combine with a little bit of buzz around them, whether good or bad. Let's talk about some of the quarterbacks. Who are the quarterbacks that stood out to you coming out of this NFL scouting combine?
Well, let's talk about the big three. I mean, first of all, C.J. Stroud of Ohio State was very good. I didn't think he killed it. I thought he was very good in his short and intermediate passes. His downfield passes seemed to need a lot of work, which is unusual because when you watch C.J. Stroud, he's a terrific downfield passer. I was at the workouts Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, so I had perfect position to watch the quarterbacks throw. And CJ Stroud, unlike the other quarterbacks, was releasing the ball before the receivers were out of their breaks, which is something major. You want to see that in a combine type setting because he's throwing to receivers that are basically strangers. I thought he helped himself. Anthony Richardson had an Olympian type workout. He has a massive arm. He made some phenomenal passes. And then there were some throws that you didn't know where the heck they were going. I mean, there were outs that were way over the receiver's head. They weren't even close. But that's what you're getting with Anthony Richardson. He's a work in progress. He's a guy that has tremendous upside, but he's got a big bust factor. Yeah. I was not overly impressed with Will Levis. And I talked to scouts, even an offensive coordinator in the area, who felt the same way. You know, he's a big, bulky guy. Some people think he's too bulky for a quarterback position. He's more of a thrower than a passer. He wants to really show off, or he's intent on showing off his huge arm. Everyone knows he has a huge arm, but he's got to show the ability to basically place the quick outs in the receiver's hands. He really didn't do that. So I don't think Will Levis really did himself any favors at the combine. One quarterback that scouts really liked was Aiden O'Connell of Purdue. They thought he was one of the more accurate quarterbacks. You know, at the combine, if you're a quarterback and you miss, you don't want to miss behind the receiver. You don't want a receiver slowing up in the routes to wait for the ball to get you. Aiden O'Connell didn't do any of that. He was basically on the mark with most of his throws. Doesn't have the Anthony Richardson or Will Levis type of arm, but he's a smart quarterback who's very accurate, and his timing was there. Scouts were a little bit disappointed. Clayton Toon didn't have a good Senior Bowl. The quarterback from Houston, they were hoping he was going to rebound at the combine. He's very athletic, but he's all over the place with his throws.
Yeah, Tony, just real quickly, do you think C.J. Stroud did enough to potentially displace Bryce Young as the number one quarterback? Because I heard from a bunch of people that really liked the way he performed. And
I understand because he did have a good performance, but I don't think you can make that case now because we haven't seen Bryce Young throw. Bryce Young is not going to throw it to either. Until either the Alabama Pro Day or he has his own Pro Day out west. This has been rumored. So I think there's that possibility because he's got much better physical skills and he's a much bigger guy. Right. A stout guy. He's got a stronger arm. We haven't seen Bryce Young throw. So I'm not going to jump to that conclusion just yet.
I will say this real quickly about both Will Levis and Anthony Richardson, right? They have flamethrowers for arms. They have, basically obscene arm talent. But that's not what the quarterback position is. Like, go back to what I'll never forget this. In preseason when Zach Wilson got hurt and they asked Garrett Wilson about Joe Flacco coming in and starting, and he said the thing out loud that nobody really paid attention to at the time. He said, well, Joe has great touch on the ball. Like, he throws a more catchable ball, which was basically him saying, Zach's just firing shit in there, okay? There's no off-speed pitch. To be a quarterback, you can't just have a hose. You have to have a two-seamer. You have to have a changeup, and you have to have a curve, okay? You can't just zip everything there. And Anthony Richardson's quote at the Combine, I don't care how hard I throw it or if I break fingers, they got to catch it. That's not how any of this works. That's not how any of this works. You have to learn touch. You have to learn placement. And those things cannot be overstated if you want to be a successful NFL quarterback.
Go back to what I said about Will Levis. Alex and the coaches said he's intent on showing what a strong arm he has. Well, everybody knows he's got a strong arm, but can he set up the screen throws? Can he put the ball in front of the running back on the screen throws? Can he throw fading corners when it's third and goal from the five and you got to place that ball in the corner of the end zone so your receiver can get up and get it? Really didn't show that.
Yeah, and interesting that Garrett Wilson said that about Joe Flacco, because if you remember, Trey, Joe Flacco coming out of college, that was the thing, his big arm. That was the thing that we all talked about. But he learned as a pro, you've got to have more than just that. And interestingly, a lot of agents that I've spoken to said that Will Levis made a mistake not playing in any of the All-Star games. Yep. And then he comes to the combine as it goes. So interesting to see what will happen with him. Before we end the show, Tony, I want to talk with you about defensive backs that are coming out of the combine. What's the latest on that position group as we get closer and closer to pro days in the NFL draft?
Yeah, the cornerback was a very strong group. They ran great times. The practice session, the position drills, they were outstanding. I talked about Christian Gonzalez of Oregon already. Joey Porter didn't run a super fast time, but he looked good in position drills. DJ Turner from Michigan didn't do position drills, but he ran a 4.26 in the 40s, a smaller guy. You know he's got the downfield speed. I thought Deontay Banks, a guy that I have been talking about for months now, runs a 4.35 in the 40, had a terrific day of position drills, solidified himself as a first-round pick, potentially top 25 pick. He has been moving up throughout the entire process. And then there's Brian Branch, which is an interesting story. Brian Branch was an outstanding safety at Alabama. He works out with the cornerbacks at the combine. He runs a 4.58, which is not a good time. But if you watch Brian Branch during those position drills, he was probably the best. He was as good, if not better, than Christian Gonzalez. He took it up another notch. The back pedal, the hip turn, the ability to transition downfield, the ability to drive to the ball. You know, he's one of those guys that he's football fast. He's not 40 fast, and he's a real good football player. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Brian Branch come draft weekend.
Yeah. Big distinction between 40 fast and football fast, as we see each and every single year. Guys, guess what? We get to do this all over again next week, and God knows what the storylines are going to be then, because we're only at the beginning, and boy, has it been crazy. But we will be here next week to go through it all. I am Brett Yarris for Pro Football Network, and with me each and every week, especially next week, will be Pro Football Network senior NFL analyst Trey Wingo and Pro Football Network senior draft analyst Tony Pauline. Till then, we'll see you.
See ya.